Hello, and welcome to ASD Radio, the official podcast of the Alamosa School District. I'm one of your hosts, Superintendent Dr. Diana Jones, and I'm thrilled to be your guide to the people, programs, and progress shaping our schools. As always, we're joined by co-host Assistant Superintendent Dr. Luis Murillo. Dr. Murillo, ASD Radio is one of our favorite things that we are honored to do each week.
Sure is. It allows us a chance to get to know our people, our teachers, our community partners, our students even better. And today is the last day of school.
I cannot believe it. It is May 21st, 2026. And our students have had so much success this year. I cannot wait to share that message with our community.
And this week has been jam-packed with activities and events. I can't even keep up.
I know.
Yeah. Sometimes I have to see what's going on through the Facebook pages, which is a good problem to have.
Right. We can't split ourselves in five pieces some days.
I wish we could.
I know, me too. Let's move on to our first section, happenings at our campuses. What can you share with us about what's going on around Alamosa School District?
We are 2 days away from the big day.
It is a
huge grand finale for seniors. Graduation is this Saturday, May 23rd at 10 a.m. at our football stadium. That is for Alamosa High School students. We have a second graduation because we have three high schools.
Yes.
So Alamosa Alternative School and Alamosa Online School will be celebrating the graduation at 1 p.m. again on Saturday, May 23rd. We hope to see a whole lot of people there. Bring an umbrella. It's going to be a hot day, or bring a hat.
Mm-hmm. We're just grateful we're not bringing an umbrella for moisture.
Right.
All right, let's move on to our favorite section, Celebrate, where we get to celebrate the people that we, our colleagues and people we work with and people in the community.
Yeah. Well, you and I get to wear a lot of hats, and there are a bunch of people in our district that wear a bunch of hats,
from
being teachers, coaches, board members in our nonprofits. The person here with us today wears three hats that I know of. We might find out about more. I'd like to introduce Jimmy Crane. Jimmy Crane has been with Alamosa School District for 12 years now. He started in 2014, and he subbed for a year and a half before, so he's a mean moose for a little while. Jimmy teaches arts at 3-5, and he wears some other hats that we're going to find out about today. Welcome, Jimmy.
Welcome.
Thank you for having me.
Well, Jimmy, let's just start off and tell us, and our listeners, tell us about yourself.
I grew up in Golden in Arvada, then I moved here in 2003, and I was a kind of like the last few weeks of my junior year of high school, and then I ended up joining Alamosa High School as a senior.
Okay.
And I graduated from AHS in 2014, and I got to play baseball here, and I was part of the community then. And I went to college for a little while, and I didn't really know kind of what I was into, but I did like to go to art class. I did like to do like ceramics classes and things like that and drawing, so I stuck around in the art department. And I was in this band, which was kind of funny because, like, I don't even play music anymore, but I used to be in this crazy band with these kids. And we all moved to Denver because we were going to go make it big.
Oh,
and
nice.
And then that, of course, you know, it didn't happen because we're here. So we did that. And then I got a job at Coors. I was like a Walmart guy. I actually worked at Alamosa Walmart and transferred up there.
Okay.
Which is pretty cool. And you get to be part of a different side of Alamosa, because the Walmart here provides a lot of jobs, kind of how the school district does. So you get to see people who are still there, which is pretty cool. And then after working at Coors, there was some, you know, the recession in 2008, and a lot of people were losing their jobs. So Emily and I were both working at Coors, and we kind of both got word that we might either lose our position, or people that were with us that had kids and stuff were going to lose their position. So that time we decided to come back to Alamosa and go to school, and I got a degree in fine arts. I actually didn't go all the way through the education program. Okay. They kind of had some lax rules around financial aid, so you can take a ton of classes. So I took a ton of science classes, a ton of drawing and education classes, and it was kind of like one of those things where they changed the rules like late in the game. So they're like, you need to pick a degree. And I had like enough credits for three or four.
Okay.
So I went with the drawing because that was the closest one, or it was fine arts. But I had an emphasis in drawing and ceramics because that's where I pretty much lived the entire time I was at Adams, was in the clay room. And that's what I do now is, I was subbing and Jill Walsinger was the art teacher at the time and she was getting ready to retire. So she had a ton of time and, she would just like, take time off. So she would like work down her PTO and I would sub for her a lot. And then I did a couple clay lessons and the kids got really excited. They were really kind of, it was the first time that kiln had been fired. And, I had a clay studio and a little gallery here in town. So we kind of brought, all of that stuff over. Like I had wheels and kiln equipment and glazes and all the stuff that's like really kind of hard to set up a new studio. So we were able to like just come in and be like, we're going to do clay with all 500 kids. And everybody was so excited. She had me come back the next year and do it again. And then so that was the year she was finally stepping away. So I decided to apply for the job with a BFA in ceramics and a alternative ed license.
Oh, wow. That's amazing.
And Mr. G, my good friend Omar, yes. He actually kind of walked me through that because he was an alternative licensed teacher also because we had both graduated with our BFA together.
Okay.
And he went up to see her grand. And I was kind of hanging out with him doing the clay thing too and doing my little gallery. But I like really liked subbing and being in the building. And the kids really, they start to recognize you and you start to just kind of, I know it's funny, but like you kind of feel like like their uncle or whatever, you know, because like it's the family and everybody's happy to see you. And so I like really liked being around the elementary kids. And I kind of thought initially when I was taking some art ed courses that I would be a high school teacher. And to be honest with you, high school kids kind of frighten me at this point. So I don't know if I could walk in and do that kind of a job.
Well, but the elementary students, like you said, are always happy to see you.
Yeah, they're happy to see everybody. They see you guys come in too and they just want like instant hugs. So yeah, I kind of bounced back and forth between Golden and then came down to Alamosa and I was kind of teaching snowboarding on the weekends and then I would come and sub all week long.
Okay.
And then just kind of was like a progression into the classroom and it's crazy to me that 12 years, it feels like way faster than that, that it's just like completely gone by. And I have students who are like adults who are nurses already. Like yes. I saw one of them graduated the other day, Emily Vance. Congratulations. Cause she's out there making moves. And I see kids on Instagram and Facebook who are full-fledged adults doing their thing. And, I think DeAndre DuPont was one of my students when he started and he's got a kindergarten coming in next year. So that's really exciting.
It is very exciting.
And see the circle.
You bet. And the pride that you see that you are part of, making an impact and developing them as adult humans. It's great. So congratulations on that. Sometimes it hurts our heart as we think, oh, we're getting old. But if we see it from the other frame, it's very exciting and a lot to be proud of.
All right, Jimmy. Well, the place you work out, third through fifth grade, is such a fascinating transitional time for kids. It is a time where they shift from learning how to read and then they get deeper into thinking critically and then how they experience the world. Thinking about that age and those grade levels, how does that shift help you approach how you teach art?
Third through fifth grade, I was talking to some other teachers about this today. It's like the golden age of development. They talk about that in sports. They talk about, you know, reading and academic acquisition at that age. They can just absorb so much. So I try really hard to just give them as much as I can in the amount of time that we have. I really do think that they're resilient and they pick up on things sometimes that are probably like maybe above their grade level. Like I think perspective drawing and stuff is something I didn't touch until I got into high school and college drawing. But we have like a 80%, 80 to 90% success rate when we do that with fifth graders and they're able to totally rise to the occasion. So try to give them basics in third grade, and then by the time they're in fourth grade, we're inventing things and coming up with new designs and trying really hard to kind of push them because they just take the challenge as like it's kind of like an adventure. They're ready to go.
Talk about some of the cool things. I mean, I've been to your classroom a few times, but for our listeners, some of the cool things that our students get to do.
I talked about pottery earlier, so I try to make sure every grade level gets at least one. And most of the time we get like two ceramics projects per grade. And sometimes we'll get a third one in there if we're able to recycle. And they just love that. They like to get to see the clay go through all the processes. And then we have some 3D printers now that we're doing, which is really cool. So we just started doing our first designs in Tinkercad. and then we're going to move those into 3D models. And then in the fall, when we come back, we're going to go like a couple more levels deeper, and we're going to try to build some chess sets and have like a chess tournament with our own homemade kind of chess
stuff. That's so fun.
We have weavers. We get to do lots of oil pastel and paint. And I do like really pride ourselves that we don't do like a ton of like collage. And it's like no haters on the collage artists out there, but we get to like do a lot of kind of like digital art too. With through COVID, we were able to get a set of iPads and a license for Procreate, which is like a very, very modern current thing that like adult professional artists use all the time. And they're able to get to draw and illustrate. And then through our digital kind of network, they can send those things straight to their parents, and there's no waste of paper or materials, which is really cool in the art room because it gets expensive. Trying to think what else we're doing. We do like recycled art sculptures, which are always fun because you get to see kids bring their old toys in, and then we get to break them apart, which is like, we talk about the destruction, right? And like how fun that is. And then they get to rebuild from like the mess into something cool. And we talk about balance and using one color to make kind of some emphasis there. But, those centerpieces are actually going to the Educators Hall of Fame next week. So that'll be really exciting.
Great. Yeah. Well, that's so exciting. And I'm, you know, as a superintendent at the district level, we're really proud to be able to provide those experiences for our students. And not everyone has art. Mm-mm. And we are thrilled and see the value and the importance of that. And another piece of that is the opportunity for students who may not be those thriving learners at first, or that they struggle in some area of learning, but that your room can be a place for them to shine. Can you talk to us a little bit about how you develop those artists in your classroom and provide a safe haven for them?
Well, I really try to give them an opportunity to make messes and make mistakes without having somebody jump on them right away. Because I think that makes you afraid to express yourself. So I try to have a rotation of like, we'll do a skill, you know, we'll talk about like drawing formally, or we'll talk about painting formally. And then you give them like an expression and then an application. So kind of like scaffold up, so that way they can really be open with their design, and it's a chance for them to kind of make their own marks and their own decisions. And we do a lot of choice art too. So kind of one concept, but they'll have five different ways that they can get through there. So they can either do oil pastels, or they can go through tissue paper, or whatever they just choose to grab, and just kind of build that safe zone, so they feel able to express themselves without being like judged. So we're always kind of like, if anybody tries to be like, oh, it's weird, you know, try to reframe it as that's interesting, you know, or just try to make them
tell me about that.
Yeah, exactly. Tell me what you're doing here, instead of, wow, that looks, you know. So just try to use real positive talk, and then you can kind of see them turn that inward too, because we don't really like accept a lot of negativity, and then we try to keep it a happy, positive place. So that kind of builds further out of the art room.
Well, I know, Jimmy, that in the past you've helped your colleagues in a variety of ways, and one of those ways is doing decorations or different types of decor for Lectura and Mi Familia. And that is such an important part of our cultural history in Alamosa and in our school district. Can you talk to us about other ways that you bring in local culture or landscapes or traditions in your classroom?
A lot of fourth grade is in their standards, you see a lot of stuff about culture and connection to community. So all of their projects kind of go back to like either a different part of the world, but we talk a lot about like New Mexico, the Hopi pottery, the weavings that come from that area, a lot of the ways that they like would use the earth to kind of provide their own materials. And then we talk about like the potters of Mata Ortiz, Mexico, which isn't far from here. I know, right? It's across the border, but like it's really maybe like a 14-hour drive, which you could drive 14 hours and still be very much within the United States. So we talk a lot about their culture too. We try to bring in some things, so I touch around the world almost like a passport. We try to start here, and then we go kind of North America, and then we bridge over to Europe, and we talk about the art of China, and then we kind of come back down the map and back over. So they just get a chance to see stuff from all around the world. And then they also share a lot about themselves. And we try to do like compare and contrast and see like, what do you do at home versus like what these people are doing, and what do you have in common and what's different?
It sounds like a wonderful experience.
Yeah.
It's fun.
Jimmy, another hat you get to wear for the second semester, you were helping us with gifted and talented programming. Talk to us about what that's looked like at the 3-5.
Well, I'm friends with Mr. G, so I tried to kind of pick up on his, him and Miss Brazel went to go see Steve Spangler Science, and the kids really enjoy a lot of that stuff. So we started there with bringing some lessons from Steve Spangler Science and some of the ones off the news, because I always see him on 9 News Denver.
Yes.
So we kind of did some of those experiments, and I had one student whose dad works over at the high school, Mr. Relier, and him and I started partnering up and kind of having the high school students come over, and we built catapults one day to kind of do some collaborative work. A lot of our gifted and talented students are brilliant young minds, but sometimes they like get ahead of their peers, and then they don't necessarily like have those social kind of skills. So like we've been working on affective goals, like trying to get them to work in teams instead of like taking the team and running, which is easy to do as a GT student. So we've done a lot of teamwork, and then we're moving more towards like an engineering kind of mindset in there. A lot of those kids really like math, and they have like the ability to speak about it. So I want to try to do some like invention, like I was saying with the chess sets. Like I know they get to play a chess tournament, but I really want them to invent these like individual pieces and characters on paper, and then bring that 3D through technology, which is really trying to get to that like modern version of like, what would you do if you wanted to build something at home? That's kind of where you would start. Like, well, we're going to go to paper and pencil, and then you need to have the tools to take that off the page and really make that like a real usable object. Moving towards STEAM, and Mr. Relier also had brought us these passports that were all different engineering kits. And the ones that the kids really kind of moved towards were like the hydraulics and robotics. And again, like the gears, it's always about like, I can turn this and make this move over here, trying to get them to think 3D. So we're really moving that direction right now, which probably also is because I'm an artist and I also like to work 3D. So trying to bridge that gap, get them to kind of have like STEAM mentality.
Absolutely.
And then we had like a really awesome activity at the end of the year where Mr. Abby at Hobby Town here in town, he donated us 40 rockets. So all the kids got to build a rocket from like scratch, and then they all had to. It's interesting because some of those kids aren't really art or want to use their hands. Like, you know, they're really smart, so they're really good at the directions and delegating. So some of them worked in teams, and they did this great job with I'm not gonna say their names, but the one group of boys, they were struggling so bad with the super glue, and they actually had to problem solve this whole thing on their own, because it's like, you can't manage 25 kids with 10 bottles of super glue. It was just insane. But they worked it out, and their rocket flew straight and did the cool twirl and popped and came right back down, and they were able to reuse it for a second launch, which is pretty rad. So yeah, we got to do lots of kind of engineering. And like I said, I want to have a better tack next year of integrating our writing and our math, so we can do like some presentation to the students around Christmas and then again at the end of the year.
We'd love to have you present to the board as well.
Yeah, I would. Yeah, that's absolutely.
And for our listeners, just for clarification, the acronym STEAM is Science, Technology, Engineering, Art, and Math. So that weaves perfectly into your background and what you're doing as well. And I loved how you talked about how students that are gifted in a certain area still have to somewhat learn how to do other things, whether it's share or get along with others, just like all of the other students. But in your classroom, as you think about leading those gifted students and then leading the whole population of students, which includes those gifted students in your art classroom, how do you weave those two things together to provide that enrichment or gifted opportunity in your classroom for all students?
I think I'm really lucky in my position, because I have a weekly meeting with students in a space where we can really actually with materials like that is important, especially now. We have a good stack of materials that we can innovate with. So, you know, I take that idea from like the GT students and letting them build and innovate, also to these kids who are trying to express themselves, and give them those same tools of like, you know, we do design on the iPads for both of those sections. And I try to not like simplify, but make it more expressive instead of like very deliberate. Mm-hmm. So like for the GT kids, we look a little bit more at angles and function. And in the art room, it's more about balance and going back to like the elements and principles. Mm-hmm. But like, I always try really hard to get, like, I think the biggest thing with both of these groups is trying to get them to talk about what they're doing, get him to think about what they're doing. Not just like, I made these marks, you know, right. It's like, why are you making those marks? What colors are you using? And really get him to use that kind of academic language that comes with that. And that's the same kind of stuff that we're working on with GT. I notice a lot of those students are so bright that they can get to the end result, but then getting them to explain and really think like critically into this next level and you know, articulate that has been like really beneficial. And it kind of helps them with that social aspect too, because they're like talking about their thoughts. They have to be a little bit vulnerable. So when they're all vulnerable together and they're like sharing this, like, you know, conceptual stuff, they kind of like reach across the aisle a little bit more. And I've noticed, especially with our GT kids, we've seen some really cool relationships that are starting with the kids, you know, like a lot of lone wolves that are starting to kind of couple, and I see them playing on recess. And when we launched Rockets, I had little pods of friends, which was really cool. Cause yes. This one boy is just so shy, and you can tell that he's just quick, and now he's making friends with this other girl in the class, and they just talk and talk the whole
time. That's wonderful.
That's so cool.
I love that you brought up, for all of your students, thinking about thinking, because research tells us when students can think about thinking, their own thinking, and then talk about their thinking, that's a high yield strategy that will pay volumes for them moving forward. And that's what, as we think about future jobs, that's what we're hearing from the community. We need critical thinkers. So thank you for implementing that in your classroom.
All right, Jimmy, we're going to move on and talk about the third hat that you wear, which is the incoming president of the Alamosa Education Association. So first of all, congrats on becoming the incoming president.
Thank you.
And then I'll let you explain a little bit about the relationship of AEA with the district. But the actual question will be, what motivated you to step into this pretty major leadership role at this point in your career?
I started on the union as an AR. I want to say like my third year as a teacher. We had a strong administrator then. I mean, we have a great administrator now, but we had like, I feel like before COVID, there wasn't like a lot of complaints, you know, like things, it was like, we went to work, everything was good. Plus I was a new teacher. So I, you know, you're like big eyes and everything's amazing. So like I kind of stepped into the role because the AR at the time, she just kind of asked me to, she's like, hey, I know, you know, you're on BAC. And I was like new teacher on all the committees because I want to do good. So, she just kind of asked me to go. And, I think it was, Kathy West's second year as president when I came in as an AR. And I would sit and listen and just kind of like take it back. And for the most part, it was just kind of like, I liked knowing what was going on K-12 because it's just, it's interesting. It's like you, like I was talking about Walmart earlier, like there's this community within our community, and you kind of just like start to hear the background information, and it makes sense when you see things that are happening on the big picture, and it kind of helps you just understand and get, like give you perspective. So I kind of just stuck with that for a while. And then, probably about 7 years ago, they asked me to be the treasurer. They were like, do you want to be an officer? And I was like, yeah, sure, yeah, cool. I'm here. So let's take it up a level. So I was the treasurer, and it's like one of those things that was kind of became automatic. You know, you don't really think about it in the background. I'm just like, I go do the check and send it off and make sure everybody's happy. But, again, it's like I kind of like start to pick up responsibility that you don't really think about, you know, people in the building will come to you and ask questions. And then I went to the rural, what do they call it? Rural lobby days. Remember when we were for the BS factor? Yes. And that was really just another interesting thing, because I know teachers from all over the state, from going up in Golden and going back and forth and being at Adams. So when I walked into that room, I was nervous. And I knew like all these people from that are teaching in Sheridan and Pueblo and Frederick. And it was just kind of cool. So I came back, and then it just kind of became this like progression. And truly, like if Ms. Reyes was going to be here next year, like I would be happy still being the treasurer. They kind of asked me like, hey man, you've been like here the longest. You've been the AR, you've been the treasurer. You know, it's kind of like this natural progression for you if you want to take it. So I took the nomination, and I was with like a lot of thought, because I have a bad habit of spreading myself thin. You know, I have some extra stuff that I do after school too, like a coach and I have my business, and I didn't want to like get spread too thin and like not be able to do a good job. But it's also one of those things where, like, I don't plan on, like, going anywhere. Like, I love Alamosa. I love our community. I love our school district. And I am, like, super proud to be a Moose. So I kind of saw it as this opportunity to continue, like, this really good relationship and kind of build something that I take really serious. When I came in, you know, Luella Lindbergh was the president, and she said something at the lunch, and I was like, I'm in. You guys got days off. Let's go. And then you start looking at the other stuff that comes with it, and it's a community, but there's also, I mean, you're all aware there's this, like, protection there too. So I was like, well, I think I want to take that, and as an educator, kind of, like, spread the good word about the union and try to bring, like, positivity there, because I think sometimes people's hackles go up when they hear the word union, you know what I mean? And I think it's not a bad thing. And I see it as this, like, huge beneficial thing for the district and for the teachers, because, you know, when your teachers, the day is busy and stimulating, and students are, they're humans, and they're all over and they're doing their thing. And sometimes it's, like, easy to, like, maybe not put something down on paper that you should write down. And it's, like, really easy to just be a human. And I don't even want to use, like, the word mistake, but, like, to like, you know, you're going about your life and maybe you forget to, like, report something, and, like, the union's always kind of there to get your back. And you actually said it at the new employee luncheon this year. You said, like, the union provides assistance when you want to help but you can't.
Right.
And that has actually stuck with me all year. And I know when I went through my thing with you, you're like, I could see you, like, being like, I want to help you. I want to help you so bad. But I understand there's parameters and rules, and it's right. So I think that's kind of why I took the role, is to be there for people and be there for you guys, and try to have this bridge between the employees and the district so we can do what's best for the students. No?
Thank you for that. You've said the term AR several times, and do you mind sharing with the listeners what that important role means?
Yeah, that's I believe it's supposed to be like the association representative. Mm-hmm. So each building has a spot for two people, and they're kind of like your contact point. Like if you needed someone to talk to, or if you had a question, or you were maybe something's going on that you don't feel right about, they're kind of people there to help maybe connect you either with your supervisor, or they're there to connect you with the CEA, or they're kind of there to connect you with you guys if you know, like, whatever the issue comes up. Because sometimes it's just, like, you know, student behavior, but sometimes it could just be weird interactions with your coworkers, or it could be, you know, so much that can happen. So
And sometimes we just don't know what we don't know and how to get help sometimes.
Yeah, exactly.
Or who do I ask about this? So
I think they too are like you're kind of like your accountability buddy, like if you have to go talk to the boss, right? Yeah. Like, because especially if you're new, or if you're, like, afraid, like, right? Because, like, all of our supervisors, they all do this. They have these huge roles. So sometimes you're like, I don't want to interrupt them for something small. So sometimes they're there just to be in the room and someone to listen, you know? So it's an important role, but it's like an entry role into, like, that next level. And then we all meet as a K-12, and we kind of bring our building reports together.
Yes. Yeah. Well, I think one of the things that, you know, over the last 5 years, we just celebrated the end of our fifth year, Dr. Murillo and I today. And we've really work to develop a good relationship, I believe, with our teachers union, and because that's important. We, in the end, we all want the same thing. We mm-hmm. want success yeah. for our teachers and ultimately our students as well. But how can we join together to support our staff? And we say it all the time, to create the conditions for them to be successful. And sometimes that we can do that together, and sometimes we have to work in two different lanes and then join back together. But we appreciate you stepping up and your willingness to take that on.
Thank you.
All right. We've talked about a bunch of hats. We've talked about you being a teacher, DT instructor, union leader. The common thread seems to be advocacy. You're mm-hmm. a true advocate for kids, public education, for self-expression, for, you know, everything that you stand for. My question to you is, how do you see these roles feeding into one another to help you become an even better leader in our community?
like sitting here having self-actualizations, like maybe that's what I'm all about.
Yeah.
I don't know. I've always, even Mrs. Crane, she tells me a lot of times, like, you're there for people when you need them to be, when they need somebody. And I have like a wonderful mom and dad. Like, they was there for me when I needed somebody. It's not like I was ever left out in the cold. But I did have a best friend when I was growing up who lived next door and maybe didn't always have somebody. So I think maybe seeing my parents, like, be good to him, you know, take him to my baseball practices and sign him up for the baseball team. He was totally that kid. So I see, you know, like maybe that core value for me, trying to teach people to be empathic, to be helpers.
Mm-hmm.
You know, maybe that's like the change that I want to see in our community. And I'm definitely the person that puts my money right where my mouth is and I show up. I'm not the kind of person that's going to just complain and then not do anything about it. I will always like show up to the meeting or join the committee or the union. So I just try to be an example for like the students and for my son. And, like just be like genuinely, you know, like, I think that's what it means to be a teacher is to be an advocate, be a helper, grow them, you know, as a human, not just like for a score, you know? Mm-hmm. So I think all these roles that I take on is in some way, shape or form, I'm like helping somebody through something, even like my side business, you know, I do the tattoo thing that a lot of times, like they always call it tattoo therapy because like people are there and we have conversations that sometimes they get really deep and sometimes they say nothing, but they're like working it out mentally. And I'm still providing this like thing for somebody to be, you know, helped or to feel like they have support or to feel like somebody is just there to listen and, you know, kind of be that like stone that they need.
Yeah.
So I think that's kind of that common.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
I hope I answered your question.
Yeah, you did. Yeah.
Sorry.
Very well, actually. Yeah. And we just appreciate you not only being here with us today, but as I reflected on the things that you've said today and watching you for the last 5 years, I can certainly see that you are an advocate. You provide an environment where students and staff can express themselves and in a way that, you know, we can all move forward and be better either at our craft or feel good about ourselves inside. So thank you for that. And thank you for all the many hats that you wear in the Alamosa School District. As always, it's a great day to be a Mean Moose. Thank you for being with us today. Education Radio is a podcast by the Alamosa School District. Podcasts are available in both English and Spanish and are a click away on the school website. Parents, remember that educating your child is key to their future and a life of options. Until next time.
Alamosa School District. Students today, leaders tomorrow.